is August 13th, 2020. Another edition of No Filter Sports. Eli Zarrett, Bob Page, Denny McClain. Denny's in Knoxville, Tennessee today. Bob is in Florida, and I am right here in beautiful downtown Bloomfield Hills. Actually, there is no downtown at Bloomfield Hills.
unless some of the stores on Telegraph, I guess, up there. I don't know.
Anyway, this the college football season is the latest to go up in smoke, and it's a huge national story.
No, not the college football season.
Is not a huge national story.
The Big Ten season, the Pac-12 season, college football. You know, SEC going to play. ACC said they're going to play.
Big East isn't. So now it's 3 out of 5 aren't going to play. Mm-hmm. Big East decided today, after, as they said, consulting with the doctors, administrators, infectious disease specialists, and other experts that comprise the Big East COVID-19 task force. Each of the 5 big conferences, the major ones, the Power Fives, have their own individual medical teams, which has made coordinating all of this virtually impossible. As players gain more strength and more parents chime in and say, whoa, that kid in Indiana that got, what is it called, myocarditis? This is the newest fear.
The enlargement of the heart.
Yeah, and the kid from Indiana has it. I'm sorry, I forget his name.
You better explain that. What some medical experts are saying is, even though they've tested positive for COVID-19 and they're not going to die of it, the myocardia.
You don't know that, by the way.
But how do you know that?
You don't know that. By the way, you don't know that.
Fine. But anyway, this disease they're talking about.
Why would you say that? Why would you say that no one will die?
Why would you start this argument again? Anyway, you brought the subject up, and I want to say what this is because you didn't. They're fearing that this could be an offshoot of anyone who has tested positive for COVID-19. They say they're starting to see this in some young people. So, yeah, it's a concern, yeah. Eli.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah.
Let me say a couple of things. The players need a mechanism to be heard. After all, they are the game. You know, they need a union. They deserve a voice. They need a voice and a vote. They need to be a part of the solution. You just can't send them out in the field and hope that nobody gets sick, hope that nobody gets hurt. And all of a sudden, let me tell you what's going to happen here. Besides losing all the money, and money's, they can make that up. They're big enough to make this up. The thing that they're going to see, if these kids wind up getting sick, and then, of course, if they have enlarged hearts, or God forbid one dies, or some can't play after they do get sick, there's going to be so many class actions lawsuits. I don't know what the hurry is. I don't know what the hurry is to get this done. Why can't they wait till spring?
Well,
vaccination apparently may be in place.
Okay, well, the players have been heard, Denny. We take you to Ann Arbor, Michigan now.
No, that hasn't
where a few been. Michigan guys, notably defensive end Quiddy Pay, he's a star, and tight end Nick Eubanks, have posted critical comments on Twitter of this decision by the Big Ten.
Bob, it's not and, an organized representation. They need a leader. They need some attorneys to lead.
Well, yeah, they have the Players Association now that they're forming. You know that. But anyway, so
but
here's
it isn't formed yet. It's got no power. It's just
none. Zero.
Yes, they're trying to get power. So if I may just take a moment to complete this. Eli and I covered Brad Cochran, great defensive back out of Royal Oak at the University of Michigan. His son Tyler is a defensive back there now going into his 5th year. Tyler Cochran was outraged by this decision, and he publicly took University of Michigan president Mark Schlissel to task, saying, I quote, "Unfortunately, the incompetent presidents of the Big Ten decided, despite constant testing and strict protocols, that the voices of the players were irrelevant and they canceled the season. It's even more disappointing that Schlissel did not come speak to our team or even explain his decision-making process. Not surprising, since I've never seen him in the facility in my 4-plus years here at Michigan. Due to this decision, I, along with many of my brothers, may never be able to play the game of football again," end quote.
You know, he has every right to say that, just like Trevor Lawrence and by the way, Justin Fields, the one of the two top Heisman candidates, along with Trevor Lawrence, texted or whatever, Instagram, whatever the hell you tweeted, SMH. I'm thinking, what does SMH mean? Do you know what SMH means? I guess it's lingo for shaking my head. So he wasn't.
Yeah, I saw that in a tweet. I wondered that too.
You know, this is bigger than the football, and I'm going to tell you why. There's a girl, and I'm not changing the subject. Girl across the street from me just graduated from Catholic, so I think it was Mercy or whatever, one of them around here. Sweetest kid in the world. She's a freshman at U of M. Has looked forward to going to school so much. the day she was accepted, put on all the Michigan stuff. She's so excited to go. And you know what? She's going to go up there. It's going to cost her father $7,500 to live in the dorm. And she's going to go to one class. A chem lab is all she has. So the point is, I feel bad for the football players. I feel bad for every single student this generation may never get over, right? Never recover from this whole school situation. Now, you know what her life is going to be? Her life is going to be 8 hours a day in front of a computer screen. She can't see her teacher without a computer. She can't write a paper. She can't do her research. These kids are going to be sitting in their dorm, staring at the computer screen and risking their health with each other. And Nick Saban is right. Now, I'm not disagreeing with Cochran. He says our guys are not going to catch the virus in the football field. They're going to catch it on campus. He might be right about that. So he says the argument should be, why shouldn't we be having school? Why is it we shouldn't be playing football? Well, he's right. Maybe we shouldn't be having school. Everybody is trying just the same for that kid in the chem lab as the football player. Is it safe to do this? And I would go as a parent, if I was a parent of a college kid, what Kevin Warren, the Big Ten commissioner, said. He said, there's just too much uncertainty, too much risk. You have to listen to your medical experts. So listen, this is what this country is right now. I think we accept it. I think we've mishandled, in my opinion, we've mishandled the pandemic in every way, shape, or form. Some of it endemic to the way our country works with 50 separate states. But you can't believe what the president says. You can't believe what the governors say. You can't believe what Ron DeSantis says. They're all guessing. They're all spinning their wheels. And it's really tragic, not just for football, for every kid in school in America.
Yesterday, I was so disappointed with the head coach at Notre Dame standing there in front of the entire world with one of his star running backs and talking about what they're going to do. They're going to play. They've got it all under control. They got a 99% negative response from the disease, and they think they know what they're going to do. They're going to let students and people enjoy the game. They're going to let them come in. And then another guy gets on there from Nebraska, Coach Frost. This guy is brain dead. He must have had his head in a refrigerator or an ice box or a solid piece of ice for a long time. He doesn't even understand the nature of the infection. And he's going to send a team out, first of all, a very lousy team.
That's Scott Frost, and he's talking about
But let me finish. But this is what this is all about. Frost wants to show everybody how good he is. And the kids from Nebraska and Notre Dame, especially the star at Notre Dame, they want to show their abilities. I understand that.
Sure.
That's the only way they're going to make tons of money. But it's not worth it. It's just not worth it. Again, I get back to what I said earlier. What the hell is the hurry? Wait for the spring.
Okay. I don't know how many people are going to want to see football in the spring, but I got some questions here on that very subject you just broached, Denny, and they come from a regular listener, Mike Rizzo, who on Twitter asks, Bob, I'm very interested to hear your show on Thursday because I don't believe the Big Ten and Pac-12 cancel football because they care about the student athletes. I think the reason is these presidents freaked out when the athletes tried to unionize. Do you guys agree? And would you be fine if Michigan and Michigan State look for other conferences to play in this year, as Nebraska says it's going to do?
I don't think it's because they unionized, but they realized that enough players and their parents, and I mentioned again, I recommend to everybody, I've said it four shows in a row, watch the Real Sports thing with Chris Hinton, the NFL 13-year veteran whose son plays at Michigan. They're just worried about the medical part and saying that if I have a kid and I know that once his eligibility is up, he has no health insurance with that school, he's going to go out there and risk myocarditis or whatever. So it isn't just the union. It's the fact that the kid said, whoa, maybe we don't want to sign this waiver. Maybe it's not worth it to us.
The colleges or for the universities are afraid of the lawsuits, as we already mentioned right here.
If they gave them a waiver that said, you're going to get health insurance for life if it's COVID related. If you get sick by playing football for us, give us some, which is only the same thing that the NFL players and the baseball players and the basketball players have. If they gave them those guarantees, they might have been more willing to do it. Yeah. But instead of saying, you take all the risk, we're going to throw it out there and we hope it works.
And of course, now here come old Dabo. Old Dabo says,
"What an idiot!
It don't matter that the Big Ten and Pac-12 ain't playing no ball this year, because I think if we win a national championship, it's gonna be legit." Well, first of all, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 aren't going to win a national championship. It'll probably be Dabo's Clemson Tigers against Satan in Alabama.
Right.
So, you know, he's probably right about that. If you guys think that we've exhausted this subject, I'm very, very anxious to hear what you have to say, Eli, in particular, about the former Michigan star defensive back, whom we both covered, Dwight Hicks, and what another former Michigan player told you about what's going on with the sexual abuse lawsuits in Ann Arbor.
Well, Hicks had he was a captain of the 77 Michigan team, and he held a news conference yesterday. He's involved in one of many lawsuits. His with the Cox Law Firm, but I'm told there's about 500 players so far that are involved in many different lawsuits. There's probably 10 or 15 different, some with 2-3 players, some with 50 players. I know guys that are involved now in 3 different lawsuits, and you know, it's out of control. Also, it's who knows what's going to happen here? What money is available? You know, this is the uncertainty and everything. In fact, I'm thinking, how serious an assault was it? What are you entitled to if Dr. Anderson gave you a digital exam that took, I don't know how long it takes, but if it's a typical one like I get for prostate and it takes 10 or 15 seconds and he says you're okay or you're not okay or I felt a bump, how much is that worth? Is that really lifetime trauma?
Yeah. You and I had this phone conversation privately yesterday. Nobody's released any of the gory details, but we do get these things, and they're unpleasant and uncomfortable. Does the doctor have 1 or 2 fingers up your butt? I don't know. I just want him to get it over with in 10 or 15 seconds. I mean, I want to know what this guy allegedly did to these players. Fascinating. Most of them were black. Jimmy Brandt.
Oh, not true.
So we never bothered him.
Not
50%.
True. Not
okay. I read that. I read it.
Bob, most players are black. Most of the players are black, okay?
Okay.
That's just a secret between me and you, all right?
Not quite as much years ago, though, when this stuff went down.
I was also given the names of many white players that are now getting involved. So I think, and I'm not defending U of M at all here, but if you had been traumatized by this and you saw in the last 6 months, why would you wait until now? I would have jumped on right away. So what are you entitled to? How bad is the assault? How traumatic is it? And how many people are just going to leap on this? This is why Schlissel was widely criticized by many people within the university that he sent a letter to 300,000 former Michigan students, including me. I got one.
If you really?
1965. Yeah, I told you that. I got a letter from Schlissel. Everybody got a letter from Schlissel that was there from 1965 to 2003. And there were 300,000 letters sent out.
You mean asking you if you had been abused by this guy?
Yes, and then if I needed help, if I needed counseling, if I had trauma, I needed to control my trauma, and I was invited.
I don't think you told us that. That's interesting.
I told you I had a letter from Schliss. I was going to read it on the air, and then I said, well, you know, what's the point? Because everybody got one. So you know, is U of M trying too hard to invite people to now say, hey, it happened to me too? And that's why we're questioning with Brandstetter.
Well, why would they do that? Because that would just cost Michigan more millions and millions
of
dollars.
Well, why would he do it?
Why would they do it? Why wouldn't they do it? I mean, they want to get everybody on the same page. You want everybody in the same group. They want to act.
Yeah. The more people, the more money Michigan's going to have to pay.
But he was trying to do the right thing.
That's just what like he was trying to do.
Just like this Cochran said it was the wrong thing. But yes, he did the right thing and reached out not just to football players, because Dr. Anderson's influence went far beyond football. Mm-hmm. He was fired from the health service. I might have had him once or twice. I don't remember as my main doctor. I was only sick once or twice at Michigan. But he treated thousands of Michigan students. So,
Okay, and in terms of this letter that he sent out, which you received, you look at the situation, and there are only two people who know what happened, and one of them's dead. So anybody can say, oh, yes, he abused me terribly. I want a piece of the gravy train, too. Mm-hmm. And I bet there are going to be people who do that.
That's what Brandstetter was alluding to,
right?
And I didn't necessarily disagree with him, because factually everything he said was true. He didn't say anything that was factually incorrect. And that is, how do we know whether this player was, or this alleged broadcaster was actually abused or not? How do we know that? And if it was a digital exam and it was over in 10 seconds and it didn't bother you, are you entitled? And but then again, I'm not going to minimize it because Chuck Christian, who was dying of prostate cancer, and he's the first big name, the football player, not a big name because he was not a star player, but he was a good player. And his, you know, to put his name behind this and saying, I was so traumatized that I couldn't even get the exams that I needed to get when I was 50 years old to see if I had prostate cancer or not.
And we've neglected to mention that for the first time in the history of this program, we're going to have a guest on twice. And that'll be Dick Vitale coming up a little later for you guys. I think we should ask Dick about that, if he has heard anything about that ever at any other universities with respect to basketball or whatever. This is a very, very, very big deal. And it's lucky Michigan has such a huge endowment. They've got so much money as opposed to Michigan State, because they're going to lose a lot of it.
Oh, what's $7 or $8 billion amongst friends? Yeah, I want to preview Vitale a little bit more. First, I want to tell you that Dr. Yaldo is open again, doing again what he's done for tens of thousands of Detroiters, including me, giving them freedom from glasses, contacts, reading glasses, and giving them the best vision of their lives. I see 20/20. You guys have seen me read the microscopic print, and I'm 70 years old, and I see in clear HD anything anywhere. Most custom LASIK patients under 45 actually get better than 20/20 vision without glasses and contacts. And if you're over 45, like everybody on the show listening, please ask Dr. Yaldo about multifocal lens exchange. Like me, you'll see the small print and you'll see it at a distance in high def. This is not hype. And these surgeries are the safest with the fewest side effects in all of medicine. Get a free evaluation. Find out which procedure will change your life in ways you can only imagine. It's 1-800-398-EYES or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com and tell them No Filter Sports sent you for special discounts. Everybody knows Michigan, in Michigan, that is Lincoln's legacy of luxury cars. Buying a Lincoln, you can demand that both the buying and service elements will be unequaled. It's why Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln leads the field. This is an exemplary family business started by Hoot, the legendary auto giant and philanthropist who owned dozens of car dealerships across the country and even into Hawaii. In July alone, Star got nearly 100 five-star reviews. One woman wrote, my entire experience was more than wonderful, and there are many, many more just like that. I've gotten 6 cars from Star, Detroit's premier Lincoln dealership. Make an appointment at 248-354-4900 or buy effortlessly online at starlincoln.com, and you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So, Dickie V, well, I'm going to play a little of it later on. You know, he was a big friend of Jim Valvano. And when Valvano made the famous speech at the ESPYs in 1993, in the interim, the Jimmy V Foundation has raised $250 million.
Incredible.
And Dick is, you know, Dick's legacy, of course, it'll be for college basketball, but what he has done for charities. And so he has taken the Jimmy V Foundation and focused on the pediatric care part. Why? Because a kid in his neighborhood, a 6-year-old boy in his neighborhood in Florida, died of cancer, and he was so broken up by it that he started his own little thing inside the Jimmy V Foundation. And he asked me if we could help. I sent him a donation. I'll tell you what I did. They've raised $250 million. I sent a dollar for every million. I sent him $250. And he's going to come on later, talk about it. And a great offer, too. If you buy his book, it's funny, he just wrote a book that came out about the 2020 NCAA tournament being canceled. Of course, we'll have to ask him whether this basketball season will be canceled, too. But if you buy the book, all the money goes to the research. And by the way, the Jimmy V Foundation, every dollar goes to cancer research because some fancy rich donors paid all the administrative costs. So every dollar. So
didn't Mark Cuban give him like $500,000?
Yeah. And I'm telling you,
that's really nice.
The Prince of Enthusiasm, the Earl of Enthusiasm. I'm going to see if he can give us a little pep talk to get through this because, man, and we're lucky. I mean, the three of us are kind of above the fray. We can avoid the crowds. We can avoid the infections. And so many people out there risk their lives every day. And not their lives, but get seriously sick by this every day.
Right, I want to get to the Tigers. And specifically, I got some questions for Denny today. And we look at this recent. And by the way, of course, due to COVID-19, this is Thursday as we record this. They're supposed to play a doubleheader today against the Cardinals,
yes.
And that's been canceled. So it looks like they are going to play this series against the Indians this coming weekend. So Monday's game, I look at all my notes that I take down from these games. In the second inning, James McCann comes up against Michael Fulmer. And they tell us that McCann had caught 49 of Fulmer's 72 career starts. Oh, and by the way, Mr. Avila, he was hitting 360 at the time. So Peaches says on the air, well, in this situation, the hitter always has the advantage against the pitcher. No, he doesn't, because if a hitter fails 7 out of 10 times, he goes to the Hall of Fame. And Fulmer, of course, struck him out. Denny, first time you ever faced Bill Freehan after being traded to Washington. What the hell was that like?
No big deal. I mean, you pitch people a certain way. Bill was a high ball hitter, so you pitched him the way
you didn't
you
break out laughing pitch. When he came to the plate, in other words.
No, listen to what I did. The first time I think I threw a shutout the first time I pitched against them when I was with Washington. And I can tell you that I talked to every hitter when they came up, right from number one through number nine. And half of them I told what was coming. And they never believe you to begin with when you say, hey, I got a fastball coming, get ready. Well, where are you going to throw it? You know, that type of stuff. So it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of laughs with it. But you know what? At the end, you still want to beat the hell out of them.
I got to tell you.
Let me ask you this then, okay? Fulmer looked pretty good, actually, which is good news for the Tigers. Daniel Norris looked great and made one of the best fielding plays I have ever seen a pitcher make in my life on that grounder that, unfortunately, now is KO'd C.J. Cron.
Yeah.
He's on the disabled list, the injured list, whatever the PC
is. IL, yes.
And so they're saying that he may have to have surgery, in which case he's done for the season. Should they bring up this kid Torkelson and put him at first base?
Wait a minute.
They say he's a third baseman.
Oh, hold on.
Hang on
Wait, whoa, you say Cron, maybe I saw he had a sprained knee, but done for the season?
Out for the season. They say they're considering surgery right now on it. Yes.
Oh, my God. Goodness.
Oh, you know, Buck Farmer's on the 10 to 14 day right now because he's got an injury problem.
What?
Gentlemen, it's time for Mize and the other guys in the minor leagues sitting in Toledo to make an appearance.
Yes.
It's Wait a
time
minute.
For them. Let's go.
Our team is not, is it 9-6 or 9-7? 9-7 now?
I think they're 9-7 after they lost Wednesday.
9
right?
and 7. They're playoff bound. They got to go with the best players they have. Come on.
The only way they get into the playoffs is if somebody gives them an exemption not to have to buy a ticket.
Jeez.
Well, in one sense, you look at what happened Tuesday night when Tyler Alexander, who looked so good the last time out, was just clobbered. He was terrible. Oh, yeah. And an 8-4 loss. And you look at what's going on with Matt Boyd, who was clobbered again on Wednesday.
Yeah. 0.24 ERA.
Are the wheels coming off already? You normally wouldn't ask that question early in the season, but it's only 60 games in the season.
No, the wheels aren't coming off. This happens all the time. They're 9-7, which is a reasonable record for any team in baseball. It's very hard to win more than half your games. And, although if Boyd is, with an ERA of 10.24 and a whip of 2, other guys are pitching well. Spencer, what's his name? Turbo.
Let me tell you something. I don't know what's going on with Boyd for one reason, because the problem that he's having is he's not getting his arm where it's supposed to be throwing a breaking ball. He has to get his act together, and somebody's got to see that. Where is everybody to help these kids? That's what I don't understand. I mean, Boyd has given up 22 runs this year in 4 starts. He's pitched one time 5 innings. I mean, the guy can't get Molly Putz out right now.
I got another pitching question for you here. Tuesday night, Tyler Alexander gets ready to throw the very first pitch of the ball game, and he throws it from the set position. Now, when I was a boy, Don Mossy wouldn't just pump. Don Mossy would double pump before he pitched. I mean, if this guy's going to be a starting pitcher, would you recommend that he pitch from the set position?
Well, if it helps his control, doesn't make any difference. It is what it is, and if he's more comfortable that way, that's fine. But I remember my first time. As a matter of fact, I'm in Knoxville. When they sent me to Double A in the Tiger organization to pitch in Knoxville, I struck out the first 3 guys when I got here on 9 pitches, and I never got out of the second inning. Never got an out in the second inning. So it happens. You go out there, you're full of pump and vinegar, and you're ready to go. And lo and behold, all of a sudden, you lose your rhythm, you lose your tempo, and it's see you later, sayonara.
Okay, we'll follow up then. When you pitched, just the laws of kinesiology would dictate that if you're winding up like this, you're going to have more power and force behind your delivery. Did you notice a difference in your fastball between the set position?
I don't think there's anything dramatic.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a Yankee who went to the set position for the rest of his career. I can't think who it was.
The only thing that was different for me when I went to the set position is that I had a better breaking ball from the set position than I did from a windup. That was about it.
Yeah. I want to say another thing about the broadcast that I've been watching. And I did watch the Detroit broadcast. I've been saying here for quite a while, I didn't understand what the Tigers were doing with Dan Petrie. He was clearly the best guy they had on the air. And it took until now. And I don't know if you know this. Jack Morris is back in Minnesota. That's why he's not doing these games right now, because they had a problem with the Twins broadcast crew. But Peaches has got to stop apologizing for everything that happens on the field. And he's got to stop saying, oh, we're still in the game. We need a couple runs this inning. Play it straight. Dan Petrie could be an outstanding color commentator.
This is a disease, or this is the pathology. You imagine that the general manager is listening to everything you said. I got that warning when I worked for the Pistons. Pete Scord said, when you open your mouth, just imagine that Joe Dumars, who was in charge, is listening. And so they think, if I say something critical, it's going to make me look bad. And once you buy into that, that you have to be supportive and all that, that's what happens. But you're right. The apologizing is ridiculous. Not calling what it is because you're trying to protect a player. People are smart enough. They're watching the game. They know. They know when something sucks.
Our listeners know when people are BSing about stuff, which is why they love this show, because we don't BS them.
Well, it's, you know what? The Rockets, they were hitting off this guy, Boyd, yesterday. It's just too bad. He's all messed up. Listen, I said 2 years ago, and I think Eli would remember this, I said, get rid of Boyd 2 years ago. I said, there's something not totally right about him. He doesn't stay consistently. What I'm talking about is where he throws from here, he throws from there, he throws from up here. And if you do all those things wrong and you consistently do them, you're going to have a bad time. But what upsets me is there's nobody within the organization right now that knows what the hell to help.
There's pitching coaches. Pitching coaches are supposed to be.
Why aren't they helping him? It's the easiest fix in the world is when a guy is thrown a flat curveball. It's the easiest fix in the world. In the world, it's the easiest fix. And they don't see it. What are they, blind? All of them on the mound?
Well, it didn't happen just now, because the last half of last season, his ERA was 5.5, and his whip was in the astronomical range of 1.4.
I believe our esteemed producer, Mr. McAfee, wants to make a comment about this. He's been waving his hand.
Well, I'm just saying, if we're going to be talking about coaching, how about a little bit of love for Joe Vavra, who came into the season, we really didn't know too much about him as the hitting coach. This guy's really... he's really coaching these hitters. No one expected these guys
to be... is that the reason?
Yeah, maybe. Hitting the ball is hard. Hey, you got to give them credit when credit's due. If you're going to bash the coaches for Matthew Boyd sucking at pitching, at least give Joe Vavra some credit for them crashing the ball.
Okay.
I'll tell you why I don't give hitters credit, because they suck.
Because you hate hitters.
Well, Miggy is still 193 with an on-base percentage of 288, which is pretty bad, and a negative WAR, by the way. His WAR is negative. Speaking of hitters, let me throw this in, okay, if I can get off the Tigers for a second. Are you following Charlie Blackmon? Who made
that right in my notes in front of me, and I was about to talk. They flashed that graphic during the game the other night. People, the average person, the average sports fan has no idea who this guy is.
He's
amazing.
He's been around a long time.
He's been around 10 years. He plays in Colorado. Anybody out there watching the Colorado games? I think a lot of people, unless Brandon, of course, is a fantasy player, if you're a baseball wacko, fine. But the average sports fan doesn't know who this is, and that's a shame.
He's a .307 career hitter in consecutive seasons in 16 and 17. He had .324 and .331, and he is batting. He dropped 28 points last night by going 0-for-4. He was hitting .500, 34 of 68. And, you know, the season is, he's played 18 games. That's a third of the season. So it could happen, conceivably.
Yeah. But you know what? I'll take DJ LeMahieu anytime. He's hitting .431. Yeah. And, you know, if there's one guy that's going to hit .500, it'll be him.
Yeah.
Out of Birmingham Brother Rice High School. I want to say this. I don't know how Mr. Avila missed that one. You know, we've always said, and especially Denny has said this, while calling for Al to be fired, what a nice person Al Avila is. But, you know, it's just these mess-ups continue and continue. James McCann, did you guys – it was a tiny story the other day. Last week, the Tigers got down to the roster limit by just releasing Jody Mercer. Here was another big free agent signing of Avalos. And of course, as you recall, they simply released his Pittsburgh second baseman, Josh Harrison, last year. You know, it's just mistake after mistake, but give him credit. Austin Romine has been fantastic, yeah. And nobody expected this when they signed him.
Listen, Avila has done for the last few years what teams in this position do. They've sold off their big stars, the Verlanders, etc., and you get serviceable players that make like $6 million a year, which is an average salary. They did it last year with Harrison and Mercer. They did it this year with Shop and Crone,
Scope and Crone,
who are good players, not superstars, and that's what they are. They fill out the roster, and so far the two of them, Scope and Crone, have looked very, very good. So those are smart decisions, at least at this point.
So I wonder if you guys have some thoughts on what happened between, shockingly, the Houston Astros in another brawl. And the Oakland A's, Astros hitting coach Alex Cintron has been suspended 20 games for his role in the ball. And Ramon Laureano was suspended. He's appealing that. He's the guy who was hit by a pitch, three or four times before this? I mean, it's just what the Astros are going through this year is ugly, but I guess you might have expected that.
Denny, I'm really surprised at the amount of negativity and hatred that's coming from all over baseball for Houston. I really am. But putting a guy out of the game for 20 games as a coach, excuse me. I mean, that's a bit over the top. I mean, four games, five games, and the only guy it really hurts are the kids. That's who gets hurt when the coach isn't there. I mean, here we are talking about no coach in Detroit, and now they want to suspend a coach at the other place. So, bottom line, let him back.
And what I personally found funny about this was that after the game, they asked Ramon Laureano, what did the guy say to him? What did he say? He said something about my mother that I really didn't like. News sources have all been perplexed ever since. What did he say?
Go ahead. Have you ever heard anybody being suspended for 20 games from a brawl?
It's ridiculous.
My point is, normally they just, you know, the only reason they get serious about big time suspensions is drugs. That's the only thing.
I think what we have here is an overreaction, obviously, just like the Joe Kelly suspension was reduced from 8 to 5. He's the guy that threw near the heads of Astros. He didn't play for the Dodgers when they were when the Astros allegedly stole the championship in 2017, but you see, he's a big proponent of Alex Cora, who the players, let the coaches and the managers and the general manager take the blame, and they get off scot-free. And it was the players are the ones who were stealing signals. So there's a lot of animosity towards the Astros.
There really is. But what happened with this is pretty simple. In the Latino machismo culture, there is nothing more sacred than the mother. Nothing. You don't ever insult somebody's mother. He either said, hijo de la gran puta, which is the worst thing. People will kill you if you say that. You are the son of the great whore. Or he said, chinga tu madre, which means F your mother. We can't say that on this show. But, I mean, it's not that difficult. And I don't blame Laureano for going after him. But as Denny and you guys are saying, 20 games?
The third of the season, Mike.
Yeah,
God.
But personally, I think that it's justified. And the reason being is a coach should never start the fight. And in a sense, he did. He is the one that kept calling out Laureano from first base. And during COVID times, he initiated a brawl. So, make this guy an example.
Brandon, let me tell you something about the real world in Major League Baseball. It happens all the time. People get up at somebody's ass, and it lasts for years if they're still in the league. This is just something that goes on and on and on and on. Guys throw at each other when it's appropriate, although you'll never know when a guy's really throwing at a guy. A guy will try to hit a guy with a curveball or a slider.
Well, did you ever have a feud with anybody, Denny?
Sure, you do.
You never had a feud during COVID times, and you never initiated a brawl where people are now at risk. We're suspending people for going out to party if they break the MLB rules. However, if you're going to incite a brawl on the field, that's going to bring people together.
You're wrong. You're 100% wrong. The bottom line is, I got the ball. And if a guy has been beating me to death like a Boog Powell, all right, the best story that I could tell, I knocked him down a couple of times. And then that last time after he hit another home run off me, I broke his left wrist. Broke it. I wasn't, you know.
No wonder he won't come on the show. We've been betting for a long time now.
Get upset. I mean, that's your livelihood also, by the way.
It's COVID.
With whom did you feud then? What was the worst feud
whole
you ever had?
About COVID.
I never had
that's
a feud with Boog, but Boog knew what I was doing. You know,
right, but with whom did you feud?
He said he didn't.
He didn't have a feud with Boog Powell. I want to know. He said he did have feuds with
no,
players.
He said he didn't have any feuds with players.
All right. Brandon wants us to go to a commercial break.
But, go ahead. Read it, Bob. Knock it out.
I'll do the best I can here. I want to tell you that Feldman Automotive is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer with 5 locations, Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. Feldman, in fact, has 9 locations total, and that includes Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Kia of Novi, Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven, and Michigan's top-rated pre-owned supercenter in Waterford, known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWNED. Now, you can buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman and relax with their exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back guarantee. It's a can't-lose proposition, folks. And Feldman adds the unmatchable kicker with their exclusive guaranteed credit approval. So we're confident that you can find what you need at one of Feldman's 9 locations. Let them earn your business, same time support our show. And don't forget, you can also buy online at FeldmanAuto.com, hassle-free at home or in the showroom. And we also encourage you to consider Power Home Solar, America's fastest growing solar energy company. All of Power Home Solar's state-of-the-art panels are made in America, too. With solar energy, you save money, you help save the environment, and help yourself avoid those costly and incredibly infuriating power outages. This is because Power Home Solar is partnered with Generac, the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems. With Power Home Solar's panels and Generac, you're going to be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for all your in-home energy. Yeah. Lower your energy bills and eliminate power outages forever. Owner Jason Waller and Power Home Solar have financing starting at just $99 a month, too. So give them a call at 1-800-POWER-90, and you'll even save an additional $1,800. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Yeah, one of the big stories today is the Dallas Cowboys. You know, they average about 91,000 fans a game. Last year, they outdrew everybody, 725,000 fans. And Jerry has announced this morning that he is going to allow at least 40 to 50,000 fans into the games when the games start in September. If that isn't irresponsibility, and by the way, they make, according to Jerry, they make half of their money every year from people going to the stadium. I find that, you know,
concessions and parking.
Sure. Yeah, 100,000
concessions
people.
And parking.
Well, it's 90,000 people a game, but I just can't imagine why. Again, I get down to what I said earlier, and I won't say it, but one more time. I don't understand the rush. That's all. Yet, on the other hand, the NFL has had only one guy that tested positive, and that was the coach of New Orleans. Mm-hmm. One guy in all of the tests they've taken. So at this point in time, they know what they're doing, but it only takes one idiot to blow up the whole bridge.
You know, saying he can at 90,000 people, and you know that with the corporate suites and everything and the average ticket prices, even if it was $200 a head, which I think it easily is, that's $20 million a game. So
you
multiply that by 10, so that's $200 million Jerry is making just on people buying beer and putting their fannies in.
Jerry does well.
Yeah, here are another couple big stories this week that I wanted to mention. First of all, 5 hours. Did you see that?
Yes.
5 hours, game one of the best of 7 Stanley Cup playoff series until Columbus finally lost to Tampa Bay, despite an unbelievable performance by the Columbus netminder, who made something like 85
saves.
Corpus Allo made 85 saves. 85. So, you know, I was in Detroit when I still lived there watching every minute of that amazing game between the Islanders and the Caps, with Detroit native, the great Pat LaFontaine, scoring the winning goal in the fourth overtime period. And, you know, I mean, they called it the Easter Epic because it started on a Saturday night and the game went till 2 a.m. on Sunday. At my age, fellas, I don't want to see anything that goes 5 hours. So
this game lasted 6 hours and 22 minutes, 5 overtimes. It was the fourth longest game in history. The longest game in history, 176 minutes. Red Wings, Montreal Maroons.
When Mud Brunetto scored the game-winning goal in 1936.
And the 85 saves easily beat Kelly Rudy, who had 73 in that 87 playoff.
Does that compute 85 saves? I mean, I know the game went forever, but still. And then the other story that I wanted to mention this week, and I have a note from one of the listeners. I think a friend of Denny's actually asking us about this. So we're talking about the next Connor McDavid or the next Sidney Crosby. That's what pretty much everybody's saying about Alexis Lafreniere.
Go ahead.
Just 18 and playing in the Quebec Major Junior A League. So this kid, Frenier, will be the top pick overall in the upcoming NHL draft. And he will go, not to the Wings, but to the New York Rangers, thanks to the NHL's laughing stock draft guidelines. And here's Mike, the retired police officer in Naperville, Michigan, writing, "The Rangers, a playoff team that had 40 more points than the dead last Red Wings, get the number one pick overall. How can Bettman justify this?" And the bigger question, how can Chris Illich and the other owners let something like this happen? The Rangers are an up-and-coming team already, and this idiotic decision by Gary Bettman has the potential to make the Rangers a powerhouse for years to come. Your comments, boys.
Well, it's ridiculous. It's the system. That's why it works. That's so people don't try and tank and finish last. That's why they did it. Maybe they have to revisit it. A team like the Rangers shouldn't get the number one pick.
I also want to mention this. Everett Fitzhugh, anybody? He's a 31-year-old young man. He has been chosen as the first black NHL team broadcaster ever by this new Seattle team. And I had no idea. Of course, I'd read this with interest. He's from Detroit. So Everett Fitzhugh grew up as an only child in the Northwest Side, about 8 Mile and Myers. He went to Ann Arbor Pioneer High School and then started his broadcasting career at Bowling Green. So he moves to Cincinnati, from Cincinnati to Seattle. He'd been doing minor leagues there. So, you know, good luck to Everett Fitzhugh. I think that's a great story. And now I'm just going to have to wage war against both Eli and Denny to get this young man on the show, and I will lose as usual.
This day in sports, Curt Flood lost his $40 million antitrust suit against baseball. And on this day, in 1994, the strike to cancel the World Series and the season for just the second time in Major League
Terrible.
History.
Horrible time.
Here's one that Denny could appreciate, maybe, if so. On this day in 1963, Dave DeBuscher pitched a shutout against the Indians. Now, here's the deal. Dave DeBuscher and Bruce Howard were the two out of the three who had a chance to make the 63 White Sox.
That's right.
They cut Denny because DeBuscher had the bonus. And Howard could throw a curveball and you couldn't throw a curveball.
What they did was they put us together and they said, whoever wins on a Saturday morning will stay. Whoever loses will be put on waivers and somebody will grab one of you right away. Lo and behold, I gave up a home run on the first pitch of the game. I lost 1-0. Dave Nicholson hit the home run, by the way. I lost 1-0. I was put on waivers 30 minutes after the game, and Ed Catalinas, who was the farm director, drove over in his big black Cadillac.
Who allegedly had made a turn at Clinton, Iowa, and decided to go watch a game, and he saw you.
And who also, by the way, signed Al Kaline right off the Baltimore Sands.
Well, if there's any consolation, Denny, if there's any silver lining, DeBuscher and Howard together won a total of 29 games in their career. And you won 5 times.
Well, come on now. Come on. Detroit native DeBuscher played professional basketball.
Halfway decent basketball player.
He was a terrific gentleman, too, by the way, DeBuscher. I got to know him real well.
This day in 1958, Rocky Colavito made his pitching debut, hurling 3 hitless innings against the Tigers as Cleveland lost 3-2. And Michael Phelps won 3 gold medals in record time in one day in Beijing. This is in 2008. And in 2016, Usain Bolt set the record with a 9.81 in Rio de Janeiro. That's all I got on this day.
We've had Rocky on already, right?
Yes, we did. Yes. Yes. 85-year-old Rocky.
And like almost all of our guests, the last thing they say to us is just what Dick Vitale is going to say eventually here. Anytime you want me to come back, fellas, I had a great time with you, and I'll be back on your show whenever you want.
Rocky has the age record of 86 on our show. I got Dick Trusewski in second place at 85, and Vitale might be in third at 81. He's 81.
Is he 81 now?
He was 81 this June, yes.
All right, I got the mailbag here, everybody. Denny's moment to shine, as usual, because everybody's always saying nice things about Denny McLean. And you can tweet us at Eli Zarid, at MU2Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. That's individually. Bob Comer tweets, Steve Kemp was one of my favorite no-filter sports interviews ever. Thanks, Bob, Eli, and Denny. Brian Fusen, great show. Kemp was really open and honest in his interview. It sounded like he didn't want it to end. Good stuff. You know, actually, Brian, we were the only people who did want it to end, and only eventually when Kemper, you know, started to ramble just a little bit.
As one of my buddies texted me, Steve Kemp, the longest goodbye in no filter history.
Can we gotta
I'll
get
tell you one thing, though. Dick's goodbye is pretty good, too.
Well,
we got to get the show on television. I've been saying that. So many shows are also on TV. So people can actually see the looks on our faces when something like that comes. Up. Three of us are sitting there hoping, and we love Kemper, and we're happy he was on the show. He was great. But it was three of us sitting there, oh my God, is he ever going to end? So anyway, Ron Grubbs encapsulated all of the apparent new rules that have been established on this program, though, of course, I'm sure these rules will be broken often in the future. Grubber says, Bob Page can no longer say Big 13 plus Rutgers.
Yes.
Eli Zarid can no longer say, is that it? Is that it? Repeatedly during your mailbag segment. And Denny will never have to pay commercial ad rates to you guys to advertise his big upcoming estate sale. Yep, you're all invited to Denny's house, folks.
Says he's got some good stuff there. All right.
Yeah. Yes, you are. You're all invited. October 2, 3, and 4.
That's good. You guys see this little news item? Former porn star Mia Khalifa is auctioning off her famous big glasses to help victims of the catastrophic blast in Beirut. She is a local American. Top bid, $100,000 for the pair of glasses, midday Tuesday. Listener Mitch had just tweeted me, I was watching the 1984 World Series pregame on VHS a few months back. I noticed Eli's glasses were much larger than normal. I was curious to know if Eli had entered a win Elton John's glasses contest, and did he in fact win that contest?
Actually, at the time, very few people on television had glasses. I think mine were just standard glasses. They were all oversized back then. You know, there have been periods in fashion history with big collars and big lapels and whatever, and that's all it was at the time.
Freddie the Pizza Man, haven't heard from him in a while. Yeah, some things I've learned through your podcast, guys. Jim Campbell was not liked by many, and to a certain extent, neither was Sparky. Also, how many people loved Ralph Houk. I was 9 years old in 1979. I would never have known all this. Now I do, straight from players' mouths on your shows.
And by the way, let me set something straight. People did like and love Jim Campbell. It was just a matter, if you ever had to negotiate for a chair or a $500 raise, you had a problem.
I was taken aback by Ralph Houk, because I've told you I was a kid growing up in New York, and when he was the manager of the year, Roger Maris at the 61 homers in 1961, he led him to the pennant in 61, 2, and 3. He was the major, you know, the former World War II hero, and I just figured this is going to be the toughest, meanest guy. Couldn't have been sweeter, and I would sit in that office and talk to Ralph Houk, and I would say, I was watching myself talk to Ralph Houk in my out-of-body experience, saying, I'm here. I'm talking to Ralph Houk, and he's talking to me like I'm a regular guy. Yeah. How cool is that?
People wondered why I never addressed him as anything but Major. Ralph Houk was an American hero in World War II, in combat, major in the armed forces, and a great leader of men. So you guys can also write us at asknofilter@gmail.com. And here's Doug Whitten. On Monday's show, Eli mentioned that a video he'd seen expressing fear that wearing a mask for too long could deprive you of oxygen or cause other health problems might have been legit. I am a trained biochemist. Michigan State 2002. Go green, Bob. This sounded suspect to me, and I wanted to look into it.
Maybe.
I couldn't find anything outside of studies done by graduates of, quote, Facebook University, which backed this claim up. I think Bob's assertion that rebreathing the onions you just had for lunch is a much bigger issue with the masks, unless you have underlying health issues.
You know, I was sent that by a doctor, and it seemed to make sense. I hope it's factually incorrect. I presented it that way. I didn't present it as fact, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
Sean O'Hara follows up. A leader of a Chicago protest said that looting should be viewed as reparations for slavery.
I don't want to get into that.
Let's
leave that alone.
Fine. So, and then
are you done? Are you done? Are these like,
you're not allowed to say that anymore?
Okay, I'm not allowed to say that.
Okay. I just want to mention that several other people wrote to agree with me in this issue about the Black Lives Matter movement. Though, again, it's an important movement. I don't hate it. I think it's out of control. I've said that, and you don't. So
maybe
our latest disagreement.
There may be some elements that are out of control. Yes. Hey, Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, longstanding Red Shovel Network supporter, serves so many of our listeners with financial plans and business plans and trust. Give Luke a call, 248-663-4748. Get that complimentary consultation. Ask him all the questions you want. Let him lay out a plan to fit your individual needs. Call Luke, knowledgeable and caring, experienced, ethical, 248-663-4748. And call Hall Financial, too, because interest rates are at dramatic record lows. Take advantage of this time to refinance your home. Do it with David Hall Mortgage. Been in this community for over 3 decades. Built this business by consistently offering better options, more personal attention. Also sustained its leadership by providing the fastest service in the business. Check out into the nearly 1,500 five-star reviews and then make the call. Go to davidhallmortgage.com or call 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. You radio people have been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. And now, let's talk to Dick Vitale. On March 3rd, 1993, at the ESPY Awards, cancer-stricken 46-year-old college basketball coach Jim Valvano received the Arthur Ashe Courage Award. And as Valvano rose from his chair, the audience stood and applauded. He was immediately hugged by Dick Vitale, 7 years his senior, and then Vitale, his arm draped around him for support, helped Valvano up the 7 steps to the stage. He got to the podium, blew a kiss to the still-standing audience. As athletes in the audience like Joe Theismann and many others wiped away tears, Valvano began to speak. The final memorable moments went like this.
I urge all of you, to enjoy your life, the precious moments you have, to spend each day with some laughter and some thought, to get your emotions going, to be enthusiastic every day. And Ralph Waldo Emerson said, nothing great can be accomplished without enthusiasm, to keep your dreams alive in spite of problems, whatever you have. I look at where I am now and I know what I want to do. What I would like to be able to do is to spend whatever time I have left and to give and maybe some hope to others. I need your help. We need money for research. It may not save my life. It may save my children's lives. It may save someone you love. I'm going to fight my brains out to be back here again next year for the Arthur Ashe recipient. I want to give it next year. And I got one last thing. I've said it before and I'm going to say it again. Cancer can take away all my physical abilities. It cannot touch my mind. It cannot touch my heart. And it cannot touch my soul. And those three things are going to carry on forever. I thank you, and God bless you all.
Now, can any of us claim that level of courage in this COVID fight that it won't touch our minds, our hearts, our souls, and anyone can rise above it all? It's the master of enthusiasm, Dick Vitale. As you like to say, big fella, give us some hope. What's going on here? Is there an end in sight?
Eli, what's happening, buddy? That gives me goosebumps every time I hear that speech, because I really never, ever thought in my wildest dreams that Jimmy would get up on that stage, Eli. If you had seen him the day before, it was a nightmare. And I begged him and pleaded with him on the phone. I said, Jimmy, you got to come. And he's basically almost crying, saying, Dick. And he's cursing a little bit. You think I'm worried about some awards, some trophy, some this and that? I'm, you know, not going to see my daughters graduate in terms of school. I'm not going to walk my daughter down the aisle in terms of her marriage. I mean, it was unbelievable. And Mike Krzyzewski, the next day, Mike got him on a plane with him, flew him up there to New York. In the hotel, he's throwing up all over the place in a wheelchair. There's no way. In fact, a lot of people don't know this. I've shared it a few other times. As Jimmy was at the site for the event, he was there sitting in front, and he saw me go over, and I started talking to some of our technical people. And I basically was telling him, any way you could bring the mic when I introduced Jimmy and talk about the fact of why he's getting this award. I said, can you bring the mic there so he can just sit there and say thank you? So he calls me over. He says, what are you doing, man? I said, I think we're trying to make these Dick. Just get me on that stage. In fact, if you go to my If people go to my Facebook, The Real Dick Vitale, there's a whole session there right on the front of it. It's V for Victory. And it's Mike Krzyzewski and I. They ran it on ABC television this weekend. We did a whole piece of what it was like the night before Jimmy coming up to speak. And on our arms, you'll see the words on Mike's arms and mine, just get me up on that stage. Because that's what his words were to us sitting there. And we got him up there. And I was stunned to see him with that electricity and that unbelievable. I mean, I stood there. I would have sat down if I knew he was going to go 20 minutes. I thought he was just going to say thank you. But he was full fired up. You know, it's amazing, Eli and Bob and Denny. The next day, when I came home, I got home, I don't know, around noontime from New York. I came home, my answering machine, all the coaches calling up. God, we didn't know Jimmy was that sick. Please tell him this. Please tell him. So I call his house. I get his wife. She says, I put Jimmy on the phone. I want to ask Jimmy something, tell Jimmy something. Great he was last night. She says, he's not coming to the phone for anybody, Dick. He's in his room crying. He's carrying on. I get choked up thinking about it. I said, Pam, I got to speak to him. You got to get him on the phone. She said, he got on the phone for one call today. He's been getting hundreds of calls. The president called. I heard his speech last night and wanted to talk. So he talked for a minute with him. I said, well, it's a president, but I want to talk to him too. So he got on the phone. It's the last conversation we ever had. And I tried to give him a little fire, you know, but don't quit, Jimmy. You can't give up. And then like this, this is his words now. This is a guy that was 12 hours early, electrifying the nation. You could barely hear him as I'm speaking to him. He's going, Dick, it's over, Dick. It's done, man. No more lectures. No more plans. Please just help raise money, man, and help my family. And I'm crying.
Yeah.
He's crying. I mean, I just, 47 years old, top of the world. I'll go so quickly in life. And I'll be honest with you guys. I have dedicated myself beyond. My wife gets so annoyed sometimes because it's 24/7. There is nothing worse than watching kids in particular. And that's what I concentrate on. Watching them have to suffer because what it does to a family. I'll just give you one little quick story. I had a call here about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago from a dad. His name is Jared Herman. They live fairly close to me. Jared's a great guy. The kid is off the charts as a hockey player. He's 13 now. First time I got to know a little bit about the youngster, Weston Herman, was I was having dinner with my wife, celebrating one of our anniversaries, actually. And we're off the restaurant and eating there at Capitol Grill. And all of a sudden, this nice young couple comes over and they simply said, I want to thank you so much for all you do raising money for kids because it affects us. Our little boy has brain cancer. And something about them, they just touched me. And I said, sit with us here. So they sat with us. And we talked. And then proud father whips out his phone. He said, I want to show you a picture of my son playing hockey. Oh, my God, it was blown away. Goal after goal, flying up and down the ice. He's playing in 10, 12-year-old league, dominating. So when I got in the car, I said to Lorraine, I said, Lorraine, do me a favor. Call up. I'm good friends with John Cooper of the Lightning, the coach. So I said, call up John right now. So she calls him up, gets him on the phone in the car. I said, John, I met this kid. Loves hockey, and he's battling brain cancer. I need you to do me a favor. I need you to send me a Lightning jersey with his name on the back, number one. And John's such a great guy, as most pro guys would be, I guess. And he said, Dick, come on, man. You got to do better than that. Bring him up here. Let him skate with the team. Ooh. Let him skate with the team at practice. Oh, my God. The kid never forgot that. Well, the father called me just 3-4 weeks ago, and he's like in tears. He said, I can't believe it. They just told me that the brain cancer's come back again, and it's the fourth time. Now, this young girl is what it does to a family. This is a successful guy. I think he's worried about working. And they said to him, you have two alternatives. One, we could do surgery, but if we do brain surgery, it's a third time. There's a great risk going to that brain again of paralysis all over the body. The second option is 52 weeks of chemotherapy. So this made the paper about 10 days ago. He's doing chemo. After chemo for 3 hours, he tells the doctor, I'm playing hockey tonight with my team. Doctor says, you can't play hockey tonight with your team. It's just the chemotherapy. I'm playing hockey with my team. He goes out and scores 3 goals, 2 assists. Jeez. And sent a bunch of my text things about, you know, raising money for a lot of people I know. And happened on the list was Bill Belichick. So I sent it out. Belichick sent it back to me. Man, talk about courage. talk about heart. And these things get me. Now, here's a kid going to do 52 weeks of chemo, and, you know, it just shouldn't be happening. That's why I want to raise so much money for kids battling cancer.
Well, you have, and so tell them how. Tell them how. Yeah. And I know that when I sent you money, I got a personal response from you. You will look at it. I know you got a book, so you can give to help a pediatric cancer and get a book. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, people can go to my website, dickfightsout.com, and it's right there. You just donate, and every dollar that you donate goes to the V Foundation. And because it's in my situation, it goes for pediatrics. We have raised, guys, so far, going into my virtual gala, which is September 4th at 7 p.m., we're honoring Mark Few, who is going to be a Hall of Famer from Gonzaga. We're honoring also Bruce Arians, the football coach here. That's why Peter King's coming here to talk to me about the Bucks and as being a Bucks season ticket holder. And obviously, there's a lot of excitement with Brady Gronkowski. But the bottom line is we're honoring Bruce, and we're also honoring my guy from ESPN. He'll have the people go wacky, Stephen A. Smith. And then we're giving to John Saunders, who I love dearly. We have Courage Awards in the name of John. And we're giving two Courage Awards to Pat Williams gets one. He was the architect who brought basketball to Orlando with the Magic. And then we're giving one to a guy, you talk about courage, he's battled cancer multiple times, Jim Kelly, quarterback of the Buffalo Bills. And then we're giving out a special grant of $200,000 in memory of Mitch Albom's daughter who died, Chica, and Mitch will be part of our program as well, but we're giving a $200,000 grant there. So again, I just need people to donate. It's amazing. I could go on, guys, and bore you, but it's amazing thinking about this. I have a guy talking about generosity. In fact, this guy, Tom Izzo, knows him well because he built and spent all the dollars to build the Michigan State locker rooms, and he lives down here now. His name is Mark Pentecost. He and his wife, Cindy, got hearts of gold. So he called me up about 3 weeks ago, and he says, I got $1 million for you because I love what you do for kids. I've been to your gala 5 times. Most celebrities put their name on stuff that then disappear. I've watched how you're so obsessed and how you know all these kids, know their families. He said, I want to give you $1 million if you match it. We go out and match it within about a week or so, and I'll put $1 million. So I got going, man. And a buddy of mine, I was being interviewed. I'm being interviewed. And the guy says to me, you don't seem like you're really thinking about our interview. I said, be honest with you, I'm not. I just got off the phone, and the guy's giving me $1 million if I could raise $1 million in about a week. And I don't know where to go, man. I said, I got to go to my same people. I hate to bother them. He said, you got to go to my friends. You got to go to my friends. I said, who are your friends? He said, people like Mark Cuban and Peyton Manning. I said, well, I know who they are, but I've never met those people. He said, do me a favor. Send me a two-minute iPhone video to Mark, address it to Mark, and I'll send it to him, and give me an email. I said, I don't do emails. I said, well, I'll give you my wife's email. And give me an email, and I'll send you whatever response he gives. So I did that. I can't tell you, Eli, Denny, and Bob, 15 minutes later, he calls me back. And he says, tell your wife to go to her email. So I call my wife. She's at my daughter's house. I said, go to your email and tell me what that damn thing says. So she drove home. It's about 3 minutes home. I said, I didn't know what it is. Here's basically, I don't remember exactly, but it's a very simple thing. Dickie V, come on, man. Count me for $500K.
Wow, Cuban.
Mark Cuban. So that got me motivated. And the next day, within 7 hours, I got the other 500,000. So we got $1 million and $1 million. And then I called to tell him I got the match. And he says to me, again, being so generous, he says, Dick, it's going to be tough raising the kind of money I know you want to raise because of the pandemic and because we're not going to be live, we're going to be virtual. He said, I'm going to help you again. I'm going to give you another $1 million if by the date of your virtual, which is September 4th, you raise $2 million. So now you'll have $5 million. You'll have $1 million. And $1 million we match, $1 million I'll give you is $3 million, and $2 million you raise, $5 million for kids. So I've been on the phone. I've worn out my Rolodex. I am right now, guys, and they just told me this morning, I'm at 1.81. 1.81. Yeah. Oh, but you know what? I'll get that now. Now
you will.
I'm home free. So that's good. We're going to have $5 million before my virtual gala even starts for kids.
Bert, well, you still need 190,000. And the fact that you wrote to me means you're really desperate, because I'm a small-time schlepper when it comes to charities. But talk to our audience. So DickVitale.com. You got to get to 2 million by September 4th. Help.
And you know what they could help too? You mentioned I got a new book out called The Lost Season. And the book is all about what could have been, should have been, and would have been if we had a March Madness. So there's stories in here about Tom Izzo, about Jawan Howard and Michigan. And the book is really, was a fun kind of book to do. I did with Hoops Weiss, who's a Hall of Fame journalist from New York. And we did the book, and Howie Schwab was a research expert. And it's just a fun kind of book. And people, again, could go to my website, DickVitale.com. I autograph it any way they want me to say. If Eli buys one, he says, I want you to write, Dickie V. Eli is the best damn broadcaster, better than Paige, better than Dave.
No, he's not. I will write anything. He's not.
Because every dollar... Every dollar that I would make from the sale of the book goes for kids battling cancer.
Hey, when Dick Vitale got the Piston job, who replaced him on WRIF? It was me. I was the only guy good enough to fill in for Dick Vitale. Hey, let's go back a little bit if we can. The other guys want to ask some questions too, because your enthusiasm is what has made this happen. Mark Cuban gives the money. People give money. Of course, they're charitable anyway, but it's because of you and the incredible enthusiasm that that Valvano even mentioned that night. And we got a little soundbite here from John Long, because you got John Long to come to you with D, and what you did in a year's time, listen to what John said about the effect you had on you with D basketball.
When I first got there as a freshman, they were practically giving away tickets. And as the season went on, and in my sophomore year, I mean, it was standing room only. That was the hottest ticket in town, because he really had brought basketball back to the city.
Yeah, yes, you did. The way you took over this town back then, I know you got fond feelings for Detroit, right? Because even though the Piston thing didn't work out, it made you an NBA coach, led to ESPN. And so really your roots, although you grew up in Jersey and were a Jersey coach, you got a very strong feeling about people in Michigan, too. I know you do.
Oh, absolutely. I love my time in Michigan. Only thing I didn't like was the cold weather. And what prompted me to move to Florida, one day I'm going to do a game with ESPN, and I'm on the lodge there, and the car goes down into an embankment snowstorm. I call my wife, why are we living here anymore? I want sunshine. And that's why we moved. But the people in Detroit were so special. And you know, I used to get a big kick out of Detroit. Oh, you know, the Pistons thing didn't work out. But you know what, in life, guys, everything is not smooth. You know, life, you got to learn how to deal with tough times. That's what makes a tough person, dealing with, you know, tough times. Anybody can stand tall when they tell you you're the greatest and when you're having super success. But people really responded in a way to me. And, you know, I caused myself to be fired. Bill Davidson didn't want to fire me. Bill Davidson was so good. He kept telling me over and over again, as I would complain about, you know, I said, Mr. Davidson, I could coach till I'm blue in the face. I remember telling my wife, you can't keep doing it. I could coach till I'm blue in the face. We can't beat the Lakers. We can't beat Kareem and those guys. We can't beat the 76ers with Moses and Dr. J. I said, I can't take it. I'll be honest with you. He kept saying, you got to be patient. We know we hired you. It's going to take 3 to 4 or 5 years. I said, you can't be serious. I could never go through this. Because I was always about, and everything that I ever touched up into there, you know, I'm not just saying, like, I coached in junior high, we went undefeated. I coached in high school, we won back-to-back state championships. I go to Rutgers, the first meeting, they give me a list of recruits. Like Bob Page, Denny, Eli. I said, who the hell are we going to beat? I want to beat Kentucky and Carolina. They said, Dick, we're Rutgers. I said, that's the problem. When you think you're mediocre, you'll be mediocre. I didn't come here to recruit Eli and Denny. I wanted the best player in the country, Phil Sellers from Brooklyn, New York. They laughed at me. Well, you look up who's the record holder who broke every record at Rutgers, Phil Sellers. And in 1976, a little trivia, name the final four. There was the Indiana, there was Johnny Orr in Michigan,
right?
Ricky Green and company, there was UCLA, and the fourth school, Rutgers. baby. But then I came to Detroit, same thing. I heard, oh, you can't get people to come to the games. People, it was during racial tension. Nobody's going to come back downtown. And I said, nonsense. If you give people in Detroit a product that's good, they're going to come. I remember going downtown Detroit, the Olympia, see Frank Sinatra. The place was jammed. Nobody worked. I said, we're going to have a hell of a team, and we're going to do a job. And sure enough, people came. But one thing, Danny, you'd get a kick out of this. Your GM, Jim Campbell.
Yep.
I used to be a fanatic. I'm a baseball fanatic. I really am. People don't realize this. I checked the unbelievable minor league stuff, too. Now there's no minor league season right now.
Yep.
I'm going to give you a name, but don't forget this name. I'm telling you.
All right.
You say, holy God, the EV. In 2 years, he will be a superstar in the major leagues. His name is Wander, W-A-N-D-E-R. Last name is Franco. Switch hitter, shortstop, should be in the majors now. He's that good, and I don't know why the Rays keep him down other than, you know.
We don't care about the Rays.
His beloved Rays. Yes, we do. This is his beloved Rays.
But I'm telling you, seriously, this guy is special. Wander Franco. Well, let me tell you about Jim Campbell. Let me tell you, Jim Campbell. I'd go to the Tiger games, and I get seats near the visitor's dugout. So I want to sit by the visitors. I want to sit by the Tigers. I look into their dugout from where I sat. So I'm sitting there, and I get there early. I go for batting practice. And he sees me one day, on the floor. Veterans come over, give me socks filled with baseballs. So he goes down up to him. What's that stuff? I said, give me one of your baseballs, man, for my friends. He said, it cost us money. What the hell are they doing?
Perfect. That's him. Perfect.
That's Jim Campbell, 110%, boy.
Oh, too funny.
So, you know, I this is the first time I've ever done an interview in my entire career where I wasn't allowed to ask a question. I want to make a statement right now instead. Dick, one of the highlights, not of my career, of my entire life, was spending all that time with you all those years in Detroit 100 years ago, covering you at the U of D. God, it was so exciting. John Long and Terry Tyler and all the great kids you produced. And then he was even fun with the Pistons. I know you didn't like it. And whenever any of us needed any information or an interview on a slow news day, I'd just come over to see you. I'd stick a microphone in front of you. I'd ask one question just like Eli did, and you were off to the races. So it's just, you're a great guy, Dick, and it's amazing the stuff that you're doing for these charities when you don't have to at your age and with your money. And that's all I want to say.
Bob, that's real nice. But you know what I remember, Bob, that you told me one time? I swear to God, I remember this. See if you could remember it. When we got beat by Michigan in the last minute, we got beat in a crowd. They were number one in the country. I firmly believe that we took so much
Of them
emotionally that they were beaten 36 hours later by North Carolina. Charlotte had no right to beat them. But you were at the game, and after the game, you came to me, and we lost the game in a heartbreaker in the last minute. And I'm a little down about it a whole bit because I really felt we could beat them. And I thought if we beat them, we had a chance to be a national champion. Because we beat Marquette that year in Milwaukee, and they won the national championship. So it would have been great for the city. So anyway, you said to me, Dick, I was right behind your bench. And I listened to you in that timeout. And the emotion was unbelievable. And I remember you telling me that.
I was in the huddle, essentially, and when you had finished with that speech, Keith Jackson, your 6'9 center, looks up at me in the press row. He's crying, and I'm crying, too. So it was the damnedest thing I've ever seen, and then Michigan went on to win.
Yeah, well, I just really, that was very touching to me because, you know, anything I've tried to do in life, guys, I've always tried to deal with my heart in it. I grew up in a very special family. My parents were uneducated. My mom had a fifth grade education. My dad maybe fifth grade as well. But I was thinking two things in my life every day. And if anybody listening, please try to listen to this because I did. My mother used to tell me all the time, my father, never ever believe in can. My buddies laughed at me when I was a high school coach and told them someday I'm going to coach in college. They said, you don't know anybody, man. You're crazy. And my mother kept saying to me, don't believe in can. And the second thing I learned, and it really, when I got the sports Emmy Lifetime Award to go to join the likes of guys I idolized who were in that, like Kurt Gowdy and John Madden and Keith Jackson. I mean, the list, Howard Cosell, and I'm in there now as well. And I told that crowd, you know what had happened in my life? Because I learned as a kid, my mother used to say of my father, it was never Dick, it was Richie. Richie, be good to people, and people will be good to you. And I've tried to be good to people, even to the point where one time my wife's with me, and there's a writer that ripped me big time. Oh, my God. He buried me from top to bottom, this guy. And he buried me, and I walked into the media room, and it was in Indiana, and he's in the room. And I walked right up. Hi, how you doing, man? What's going on? Talk, chat. And I walked to him. My wife literally says, how could you talk to him? He asked, what am I going to do? I'm going to fight with the guy. I'm going to get an argument. Bottom line is, you know, he's entitled to a pit. I say, he's wrong. He wrote a whole column. It was so wrong. He wrote a whole column. I mean, a guy has a right to say, you know, if he doesn't like you or if he doesn't think you're good, that's fine. But this guy wrote a column saying, how in the world could I be nominated for the Hall of Fame and take away opportunities? He listed a number of NBA former great players. He says, getting in, those guys is ridiculous. Well, he was wrong. I was not nominated as a player because I was nominated as a contributor to the game, as a sportscaster. So when he really, by going over to him, 2 days later, he writes a column about how, I have to give him credit. He wrote a column about how he was wrong and how he made a mistake and he wants to apologize and all that jazz. And bottom line is, got that, baby. You see this right here? You see that? You see it? And how many people put that on? There aren't many people.
You know,
I really wear it. I because Peter King's coming.
I tell people,
what ring is that for? What ring is that for?
That's Hall of Fame? The National Basketball Hall of Fame.
God bless you.
Yeah. Yeah. I wondered why, when you and Valvano, and at the time I remember thinking, what's with all the Italian coaches? And now that I'm talking to you now, I mean, there's so many great Italian coaches. Is it the passion of Italian Americans? By the way, anybody's Italian out there, and I tell this, Dick, to everybody's Italian, you need to watch the 3-part PBS series called The Italian Americans. Any Italian parent should make their kids watch that to see what the struggle was to make it in America, why they were discriminated against, why that's why the Cosa Nostra started, because Italians couldn't even get a job. But the passion, the Lou Carnesecca's, the D'Antoni's, the Fratello's, the Izzo's, Massimona, is there something?
Massimino.
Is there something about the Italian energy and enthusiasm or something that has led to so many great Italian coaches?
Well, you know, Eli, it's a lot of linguine, a lot of macaroni, a lot of lasagna, it's those meatballs. But, you know, all the guys you mentioned had such a passion for what they did. And, you know, they didn't care. Press conferences were great. I could almost predict every press conference that's going on now. Everybody's worried about the social media. Everybody's worried about, you know, all the things that are happening, what's going to be written. So they're all, oh, we didn't play well. I heard a coach about a year ago, I'm doing a game, and the guy says, hey, we just didn't play with no intensity, man. Like, no emotion. We weren't ready. And I looked at him. I felt like saying, hey, buddy. Well, that's why you're getting paid. You're getting paid to have them ready. I don't want to hear about they didn't have emotion and passion. That's your job. That's your job. But the bottom line is everything's so stereotyped. You know, guys like when you think Massimino, Carnesecca, they said what was on their mind, and it was beautiful to hear. You didn't know what was going to come out of their mouth. And it was great because they were talking from their hearts. But today, everybody is so protective because of all the stuff going on.
Well, anyway,
even Louis' comment, Dick, since Eli brought the Italian thing up, and I quote Louis Carnesecca, there is no good Italian food west of the Hudson River. you're a Jersey guy. You resent that?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of good Italian food right down here. We ate it one last night down here in Sarasota. Took my grandsons. My grandsons broke my heart, though. I got to tell you this. They're juniors. And well, no, they're rising seniors. They would start their senior class this year. And they're big-time tennis players. I mean, really big time. They're highly rated, top 20 in the country. Wow. I wanted them in the worst way to go to Notre Dame and continue the family tradition.
Where your daughters went, right, yeah.
My daughters played tennis at Notre Dame. Right. My sons-in-laws went to Notre Dame. My one son-in-law was the quarterback there in 96. He's now a leading judge here in Sarasota. My other son-in-law was a lacrosse star. He's now an orthopedic surgeon here in Sarasota, has his own practice. But the bottom line is the coach has been recruiting my grandkids since they're in the eighth grade. And he played tennis at a time in Notre Dame with my daughters. So I thought it was a lock. I didn't think it was anything. So all of a sudden, they played in Kalamazoo in a national tournament, did really well, both of them, and recruiters coming out of the woodwork chased them. So I said, what are you going to take these visits? Oh, we just at least want to go visit. So they visited Michigan. They came to Ann Arbor for the weekend. They came for a football game there. They came also. They went to University of Florida. And they went to Duke. And they went to Notre Dame. And I forgot the fifth one. But the bottom line is, so now it's time to make the decision. I'm getting a little worried because I'm hearing a lot of Duke in their conversations. So I called the coach at Notre Dame. I said, Ryan, I'm getting worried, man. To relax. He said, I talk to them every day. He said, they're locks coming here. They've been coming here since the eighth grade. I said, I hope you're right. He said, I don't feel that way. So sure enough, the next day, they come over to my house. Papa, you're not going to like, I said, excuse me, not going to like what? You made your decision. And by you saying that, you're telling me it's not Notre Dame? Papa, if we're football players, we're going to Notre Dame. But we want to play tennis outdoors. We want to play outside. It's too cold, January. We're going to Duke. I said, Duke. Krzyzewski meets with them. I told Mike this because Mike called me up after they visited Duke. The coach brought him over to Mike's office, and he met him and saw him. They're 6'7" and 6'6" now. I can't believe it. They could hit that serve, man. So the bottom line is Mike called me and said, I didn't know your grandkids were being heavily recruited. Tennis for our coach wants them badly. I said, yeah, and he said, well, if I get done with them here for 40 minutes, he said, they're coming to Duke. So when they decided to Duke, I said, Mike, I said, you really pissed me off. I've been recruiting them since the eighth grade with Notre Dame. You get them 40 minutes, and they're going to Duke. And he said, about time they made a good decision.
That's too funny. Well, listen, if I guess we can let Dick go.
But, and by the way, Dick, just one thing, Eli. That puts to rest, for once and for all, your nickname, which I know you don't like, and I've even heard Tom Izzo use it, Dookie V.
Oh, yeah, Dookie. Right. No, the best was Vince Starr called him Vinny Vituli. Vinny Vituli.
I used to get a kick out of the Dookie V for this reason. People see me do a lot of Duke games. Why do I do Duke games? Because ESPN, they're the highest rated team on the network. So they give me a lot of Duke games. So people think I'm associated with Duke. I could care less who wins a game. I have one thing I do after every game, and I got to get running here. You know where I'm going? I got to go see my grandsons right now. They're working out with this guy who's on a pro tour. So anyway, this is unbelievable. Every game I do, guys, I sit there and the game ends. I watch not the winning coach. I watch the losing coach walk into the locker room. And I say to myself, I bless myself.
It's not me.
Man, I'm lucky because I know that feeling. It is the worst feeling in the world. The one thing about coaching, it's either a high. I'm sure Denny as a player, you got that too. You win, it's the greatest feeling in the world. You lose, it's the most miserable feeling. There's no in-between. Even there's in-between. I've been undefeated. I'm going to my 42nd year. Yeah. Screw Krzyzewski's record of 1,000-some wins. He's got losses. I haven't lost a damn game. I haven't for 42 years. I've been stealing money, man.
As the prince of pessimism, Chuck Daly, said, there's only two states of mind in basketball, winning and misery.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Go to DickVitale.com. Go to DickVitale.com, buy a book, contribute to pediatric cancer, help him, help us out. Dick, great seeing you. Enjoy the tennis practice today. Once again, great talking to you.
Dick, it's been great. Thank you.
You guys are really, let me tell you this. I've been interviewed by a lot of people, but you're special people. And anytime you ever want me, you call me. Because really, Denny brought me a lot of great memories with the Tigers pitching. But you guys, Eli and Bob, you've been, you know, so vital, especially to the city of Detroit. And I've always enjoyed that. I'll tell you another guy I missed so much was J.P. McCarthy. I used to love going on his show. Love going on his show. God bless, guys. Again, go to DickVitale.com. Please make a donation or get my book, The Lost Season. It's a lot of stories, Michigan State, Izzo, Michigan. And most of all, every dollar from that book is going to go for kids battling cancer. And the bottom line is I'll autograph it to your desire.
Perfect.
Thank you, Dick.
Great, Dick.
Thanks.
Take care, buddy.
Have a great day, Dick. All right. Thank you.
Too funny. I got to tell you, I was at Dick's house about 10 years ago doing a thing for the Pistons, and I see he's got all these hats over on one side. I go, wow, you got a Brooklyn Dodgers hat. How cool. And he said, take it. I go, no, I'm not going to take it. It's your hat. He says, take it. I said, Dick, come on. He insisted I take the hat. I couldn't leave that house without taking the Brooklyn Dodger hat. So
you take
big,
the hat?
Big heart. I took the hat. He made me take the hat. Big heart. Anyway,
there's so many. There's so many things. Good God, we could have asked him. But, you know, when he's talking, when he gets on a roll the way he just did, folks, you don't get a word in edgewise sometimes.
That stuff about Jimmy V at the top was the inside story. That was very, very interesting. Well, thanks for listening today, everybody. We'll see you again on Monday. Have a great weekend and stay safe, right?
Stay safe. That's right. Stay safe.
Bye-bye. Thanks, everybody.